Imagine a school day built around your child's needs and interests. It's possible with K-12. K-12 powered schools are accredited, tuition-free, online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Students learn from state-certified teachers trained to teach online. And with the flexibility to learn wherever there's internet, it can fit into any family schedule. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. You can make the switch at any time. Go to k12.com/podcast today to learn more.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. I'm speaking with Professor Diana Shaw, professor of political science at Loyola University in Maryland, a visiting professor in government department at Harvard University. Her new book is His Greatest Speeches, How Lincoln Moved the Nation. We are in 1838, a young man hasn't met Mary, hasn't settled down, hasn't lived in that house that you can visit today, but he's imagining a landscape where he can prosper on the basis of his reading. He's a textual fundamentalist. And now we come to his classical understanding of the word passion. What did Lincoln mean when he proposed that passion was the enemy, the adversary?
He talks about the way in which passion, by which he always means negative passions, passions like hatred and revenge. He says that those passions at the time of the Revolution had a salutary effect because hatred and revenge could be mustered in the service of the cause of self-government, the opposition to British tyranny. But he says that now and in the future, once we have our self-governing republic, those passions are a threat, those passions of the people. His analysis of passion revolves around two sets of passions, the passions of the people that I've just mentioned, but also the passions of the great. And their passion is for rule, this dominating ambition. And Lincoln shows the threat that can be posed by a person of the founding type who comes along after the founding. In other words, he wonders whether such a person will be content to remain within the horizon of Republican self-government. If you can't found a republic, then maybe the only option left to you is to destroy the republic. So he warns Americans of the threat of future Caesars and Napoleons and Alexanders.
I take it to heart that that reference, Alexander and Napoleon, would have resonated with everyone. But at the same time, he's referencing powerful men of his time. You mentioned John C. Calhoun, who is seen as a villain in the North and as a savior in the South, a strong-minded man of the slavocracy. However, he also points to remarks by the president, Martin Van Buren. He takes issue with the president. How so, Professor?
Yeah, I don't know that he sees Van Buren as fitting within this mold of the Caesar or Napoleon, but he certainly is worried about the stance that Van Buren took in his first inaugural. Van Buren also acknowledged that there had been sort of outbreaks of mob violence. And Van Buren's solution is that everybody should just avoid irritating the sensibilities of the Southern slaveholders. In other words, Van Buren recommends a kind of self-censorship on the part of those who are opposed to slavery. He recommends really silencing dissent, and he does so through an appeal to, fraternal feeling. And Lincoln, I think, believes that this is a misuse of the appeal to fraternal feeling and union. And so what Lincoln instead is trying to do in the Lyceum Address is actually open up the space for far-reaching and critical civil discourse.
Yes,
go ahead.
Civil discourse based upon reason. He has a meaning of reason that we have lost today. So his answer to passion is reason. How so? What does he mean by sober reason?
He means a willingness to engage on the level of principle And I think you see him always in his rhetoric trying to bring people away from their passions or their self-interested calculations and to bring them to engage at the level of principle. He is reminding Americans that self-government depends on an educated electorate. We know that actually in the speech that's even earlier than this 1838 speech, the speech that he gave when he announced his first run for office when he was only 23 years old, he spoke about the need for public education and stressed literacy.
The speech at Lyceum, you date these speeches to what he had, what Lincoln had in mind. This is the speech based on the Constitution, 1787. Is he thinking of mob rule? Is he thinking of vigilantism? Is he thinking of the South? All three. Can we tell at this point that he sees the South as a threat, its passions as a threat to reason?
No, he does not say it out loud. I think slavery in the Lyceum Address is more of a subtext. But I think if one reads carefully, one can see that slavery is present. And it's not only the passions of the Southerners in defense of slavery, but it's also now the more extremist passions in the North that are anti-slavery. In other words, this new brand of immediatist action against slavery. In other words, folks like William Lloyd Garrison and the Garrisonian abolitionists. So this is a different kind of anti-slavery movement than the anti-slavery movement that Lincoln associates with the founders and that he sees himself as in the tradition of.
Professor, the in-between period, because we're about to make a leap into the war, the Douglas debates, or the Cooper Union speech, do they echo these same building blocks that he uses in 1838?
Yes, I think they very much do. You could say that what happens in the 1850s is that it turns out no one took Lincoln's advice. The Lyceum Address did not inaugurate a turn towards reverence or towards reason. And so the crisis of the House divided becomes much more prominent and extreme in the 1850s. And so all of those great speeches that he delivers against Stephen Douglas, beginning in 1854 with the Peoria Address, going all the way up through the Cooper Union Address in 1860, all of those speeches are, again, designed to meet the crisis of the day by Lincoln's sophisticated discussions of principles, trying to bring Americans back to the principles of the American founding.
I take from your analysis that he has three goals in 1838, and I believe you just said that they continue through the 50s. General intelligence, education, sound morality, and reverence for Constitution and laws. Those three things, they're consistent all the way through.
That is right, yeah.
And in making that, It's astonishing that someone could be so disciplined for 25 years. I have no memory of who I was when I was 28 years old, none whatsoever. But Abraham Lincoln did. And does he remain a textualist fundamentalist all the way through as well? No change. The book, the reading of the text is my charter.
Yes, I think that is so, although the text that most preoccupies him will shift. So in the Lyceum Address, it's clear that his focus is on the Constitution, and he believes if he can bring Americans back to the altar of the Constitution, then all will be well. But by the 1850s, it's clear that constitutionalism is in disarray, under attack from all sides. And also that the sort of groundwork for the Constitution, the Declaration of Independence, also come under attack.
Let's get to the Declaration. Yeah. The book
So he shifts from the Constitution to the Declaration as his primary text.
His greatest speeches, Diana Schaub is the author. I'm John Batch.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.